Big show for you here today. It's another edition of Mock Draft Monday. We got a heavy hitter. Field Yates from ESPN joins the show to go over his five favorite player to team fits from his most recent mock draft. We hit on a pick that I have been wish casting for a minute here now, right off the bat. So absolutely love that. Then we stick in the AFC East and we talk about an offensive lineman who could really fit the New York Jets. Then we get into my favorite prospect that is not a wide receiver, and Field has him going to a perfect spot, but with a little bit of a caveat, plus the player the Field is willing to stand on the table for in this year's NFL draft. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Monday, March 24th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And join me to do just that for another year back on Mock Draft Monday. It is ESPN's Field Yates. Field, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much. By the way, I cannot be held liable, like, for anything that I say that takes place between now when we're having this conversation and when it drops. So if for some reason this information seems weird or antiquated, I'm going to go ahead and blame Adam Schefter. He's probably breaking the news that would influence our draft thoughts. But it's great to be on with you again and honored to be back on the show.
I appreciate you doing my job as the host of the show to give the necessary disclaimer that obviously we have pre-taped this. So again, you're making my life easier already, Field. As I mentioned, you were on the show last year. Before we get into your picks, well, just let me table set here real quick. Remind everybody, the new folks, all the Field heads who have come over to watch him on the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast here. What we do on Mock Draft Monday, we know the deal with mock drafts. People love them. People that do them sometimes hate them, but they are a necessary part of draft season. And I mean, it just, listen, people love the mock draft. So instead of going pick by pick through your mock draft, I don't know, 12.0 or whatever, I simply want to take some of the smartest people who are doing these mock drafts, pick their brains on maybe five of their favorite player to team fits from their most recent mock draft, because there's a few that stick with you that you absolutely love. So that's what we're going to dive into today. But before we do get into this one this year, Field, I do just want to recap your picks from last year when you were on the show. You had Amarius Mims to the 49ers, Darius Robinson to the Lions, Nate Wiggins to the Eagles, Dallas Turner to the Falcons, and the one that you nailed was Marvin Harrison Jr. to the Arizona Cardinals. So I got to just quick level set here, because I think it's a really fascinating conversation. What was your view of Harrison's rookie year and kind of some of the ups and downs of it?
Yeah, so by the way, that would be like me hitting a free throw, right? Like a relatively easy thing to do in life, because we
knew
the
first three quarterbacks. Doesn't matter. A hit is a hit. Doesn't matter.
That's fair, but the first picks last year were, of course, going to be the three quarterbacks. And so I felt like, you know, if the Cardinals stood pat at four, they were bound to take Marvin Harrison Jr. It was frustrating, obviously. I think you and I, who view this stuff most specifically through the fantasy lens, can agree on that. I saw a quote from Jonathan Gannon at the combine. I believe it was with a local Arizona outlet, how he was talking about, hey, the guy had 8 touchdowns. That's a lot of touchdowns. That can be true. It can still also be a frustrating season for a kid who has so much talent, clearly. And it won't surprise any of us if Marvin Harrison Jr. is, you know, atop the wide receiver totem pole, or at least close to it, in the next 2, 3, 4 years. It's quite crowded up there right now. But the point is, if he becomes a true blue prospect at the NFL level, like he was at the college level, none of us will be the least bit surprised. But you think back to the opening week of last year, what was it, 0 catches for Marvin Harrison Jr. against the Bills, a game in which the Cardinals were up early. It was like 28-7, and it was everybody but Marvin Harrison Jr. who was balling out. So I hope they find a way to sort of saturate more targets his way. Trey McBride's an awesome player, but it's not like their wide receiver room is so deep and talented that Marvin Harrison Jr. is getting boxed out just because there are other bodies that are taking up spots from him. And, you know, the truth about that pick last year is they had offers to move back if they wanted to, did Arizona. So if you're going to stay there at pick 4, rather than turning pick 4 into potentially pick 11 or pick 6 and a bunch of other picks where you could have gotten a really good player plus a lot more other players, you stood pat at 4 because you believed that much in Marvin Harrison Jr. I would have liked their actions to, at least on the field, to match up with their conviction in the draft.
That's a great point. And it makes me feel like that there will be a little bit more conviction to meet in the middle in terms of his usage, right? It was a lot of just straight up vertical X receiver stuff. So hopefully we see him moved around a little bit more. And I think that could be part of the key of unlocking Marvin Harrison Jr. in his second season. Let's get into your picks for this year, the 2025 NFL draft. Hit me with your first favorite player to team fit.
Yeah, so just full disclosure, my most recent mock drafts, well, I've done two somewhat recently. One predated free agency. Free agency hits and so much can change. So I did have a couple of picks that went later in the first round that I haven't actually made yet. But the second, I guess the other most recent mock draft was a 10-teamer. It was the first 10 picks. Actually, interestingly enough, the intent of the piece was I was going to launch Monday of free agency, a top 10 mini mock draft. And then every time a move took place that consequentially impacted the top 10, I would go in there and update the top 10 mock draft. And then, at least through my eyes, nothing really happened in week one that was going to shake up what I had from the initial mock draft, right? At that, I didn't have the Jets taking a quarterback or something like that, where once they signed Justin Fields, that's off the table. The Raiders didn't sign a running back, you know, at the top of the board. Neither the Giants nor the Browns, or even the Titans for that matter, added a quarterback. So the bottom line is that it was a relatively boring week in the first portion of free agency relative to the top 10 picks. Big time filibuster there to get to my first favorite fit. And perhaps it's low hanging fruit, but I bring it up because I think there is at least a realistic chance this takes place, which is the Patriots and Travis Hunter at pick number four overall. This, of course, would only take place if two quarterbacks go in the first three picks. I think Cam Ward's a lock at number one right now. And I fully expect Tennessee to make that pick. But a last-minute offer could come in that's too good to refuse. But let's give Tennessee Cam Ward, and then I think the Giants at pick three, as things presently stand, are close to the floor for Shedeur Sanders. That puts Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter in picks two and four in my mind. The Browns take Abdul Carter, that lands the Patriots, Travis Hunter. As of this moment, the Patriots have this gigantic wide receiver need. Not that Travis Hunter couldn't impact them on defense as well, but when you've got a cornerback tandem led by Christian Gonzalez and Carlton Davis, and a wide receiver group led by, I guess, Mac Hollins and Kendrick Bourne and Pop Douglas and Jalen Polk, it's pretty obvious where this team needs to put its focus right now. If they drafted a player like Travis Hunter, they could sign Stephon Diggs, who recently visited them, but Diggs coming off of an ACL tear. I think Hunter's tape is comically good. I think he's the number one player in this draft, whether you want to call him a wide receiver, corner, or both. I think the higher end outcome for him is as a wide receiver as opposed to a cornerback. But that isn't to say that I don't think he could become a lockdown Pro Bowl level corner. So I give the Patriots Travis Hunter with the idea in mind that not only is he the fourth pick, but he is the best player on their offense along with Drake May.
Field, buddy, you're speaking my language with this one. I've been saying on the show all throughout this week that we need to all be wish casting Travis Hunter to the New England Patriots to mostly play wide receiver. And look, I think the idea of him being a two-way player, and you know, I actually listened to an interview that the NFL Network guys did with Coach Prime, and you know, he's basically saying like, just because other guys haven't done it before doesn't mean my guy can't do it. You know, which of course that's what he's going to say about his player. And I mean, I think you got to give him a shot because he is so good at corner. And I actually think New England's a really good fit for him as a cornerback too, because you have two guys like that are potential lockdown guys on the perimeter. Christian Gonzalez in the prime of his career. Carlton Davis, maybe not as much in the prime of his career, but still was a plus starter for the Lions last year. You could sprinkle him in effectively on defense, but it's really the appeal of him as that wideout in New England that just makes this such a high upside selection. I love Hunter's game as a receiver. I love the way you described it, like comically good. I think he compares a lot to prime Odell Beckham, really, to me, both as like a separator, a guy that can win at the catch point. And, you know, there's a couple of plays in, especially against BYU, like late in the season, he just gets an in-breaker and houses it. And that is very reminiscent of Odell in his prime years with the Giants. So it's interesting that we just talked about Marvin Harrison. We're talking about Travis Hunter, who I think Hunter is in this class, if he's just a wide receiver, easily to me fielded. Is the number one receiver in the class. And I feel pretty convicted. Yeah. I'm glad you said that too, because some people don't agree with that. But I do think there's a gap between him and everybody else. If we were to stack just, I know this is weird because he's such a unique player, but if we were to stack Hunter with the three guys that went in the top 10 last year, Harrison, Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, where do you think he slots? And I may be asking you this because this is an exercise I do every year and I'm trying to work through this myself.
Yeah. So last year, just for some perspective, I had Harrison and Malik Nabers third and fourth overall on my big board with Roma Dunze sixth. So you had three of the top six prospects in a loaded draft were wide receivers. It's interesting. As humans, no matter what you say, it's hard not to incorporate a little bit of bias based off what we saw this year. Everybody feels like they liked Malik Nabers more last year than they actually liked Malik Nabers at the time because he had this unbelievable season, right? I remember last year getting, you know, and there were a lot of us that I think started to make this point, but early in the draft process, myself and Mel on our show started to sort of say, like, is it that crazy to think that Malik Nabers could go ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr.? And we agreed at the time it wasn't. There were plenty of NFL evaluators that thought this was at least neck and neck. But I would put Travis Hunter in that same category as those two players. The difference between he and Roma Dunze, and not that Rome was a bad athlete by any stretch, right? Rome ran like a 4.44 or 4.46 at the combine at 6'2 and 216 pounds or something. But Travis Hunter is just a special, special athlete. And I've got my big board that I'm working on right now, 380 some guys. And, you know, right now, and this could be a phase that I work away from, but, you know, just thinking about the league at large right now, I tend to defer to athletes, right? And Travis Hunter is just such an exceptional one, such a slippery run after catch player, as you alluded to, but just has really rare body control that you see on both sides of the ball. So I think he would have been kind of in that same category if you only made him a wide receiver, which is also a hard thing to separate from your brain, is the idea that you're only evaluating him in a spot that he might not even play full time. Might not. He could well, but he also might not play full time wide receiver at the NFL level.
I love this pick. I think it immediately gives Drake May number one receiver to grow with, a guy that, again, he's going to get on the practice field with Drake May, and Drake's going to say, hey, Josh, Mike, I need him on the field with me 100% of the time, because the best part about him is he could play anywhere in a receiver corps that needs help everywhere.
The Patriots, last thing on this is, and then we'll move to a second pick, is this is something that applies to this selection, but just in general, is an important thing to remember is, you know, one of the hard things in the NFL is when you've got guys punching above their weight role-wise, right? And that's been one of the things the Patriots have really struggled with, is you've got guys who are being pressed into Kayshon Booty is leading them in snaps last year. And it's like, he's like an ideal fourth receiver, maybe? I don't know, but definitely not.
He was on the roster bubbles at times in training camp. Like Tyquan Thornton, who was cut in season, was the starting X receiver over him.
Right. So they need to get guys slotted appropriately, and Travis Hunter would push him a lot closer to that.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, Jalen Polk even last year is like taking snaps as their X receiver running go routes, which there was nothing about him at Washington that told you he could probably do that. So I love this pick. It's probably, I'm just spoiler alert, it's probably going to be my favorite of the ones that you do here, but give me your second favorite fit here.
I'm going to stay in the AFC East. I'm going to go just three spots down the board and go to the Jets. And Armon Membu, offensive tackle from Missouri, who was a college right tackle, finished up his last season at just 20 years old, by the way. This kid's super young. Wow. There are a handful of guys that will go early in the, let's call it the first 20 or so selections. There are Mikel Williams, Armon Membu, very, very young. Colston Loveland. So this is a kid who's got so much room to grow and get better. It's a neck and neck race between he and I think Tyler Warren for the two guys that maybe improved their draft stock the most this past year. Warren, who, by the way, more than doubled his catch production and receiving yard production in 2024 alone compared to the entirety of his college football career up to that point, which is just hilarious. But Membu had a great, great season. This guy just kept on proving people, not wrong, but just proving that this guy is not, I mean, there was talk about him coming into the season as, you know, is this guy a fringe round two or three guard? Doesn't have ideal height. He's a shade under 6'4". But he kept balling this past year. And when you're looking at the traits that most stand out for me for Armon Membu, is he is a tone setter. This is a guy who looks like kind of a jerk when he's playing football, which is something you like in your right tackle, right? You want a guy who doesn't really care for the opposing players. And that tone setting power is real, plays with a real nastiness to him. He's a very good athlete, too. And I mentioned my deference to athletes, but there used to be a time where right tackle or even guard was considered sort of the less valuable parts of the offensive line. The left tackle market is still the biggest, but right tackles now, I mean, they're making $25, $26 million per year. Lane Johnson, even more than that, is the clear-cut best in the league. But we're not at the point anymore where the idea of taking a right tackle in the top 10 is foreign. The Jets right now have a glaring right tackle need. Morgan Moses started for them there last year. He left in free agency. But this would be one where whether Justin Fields is the long-term starter for the Jets or a bridge to somebody else at a different time, he'd be much better protected at right tackle. And Membu's athletic enough that some of the stuff you anticipate the Jets will want to do as with Justin Fields as a leg with Justin Fields' legs, excuse me, that he'll be able to get out in space and get where he needs to be.
One of the highest compliments I can give an offensive lineman, like as a prospect or even guys in the league, is, and I like watching offensive line play. I enjoy it. But if you don't like watching offensive linemen, and I'm saying you're going to enjoy watching this guy. Like, that's how I feel about Membu, because he's such a riot. As you mentioned, I mean, he's a tone setter. He's aggressive. He's got nastiness to him, but he's also got the movement skills out in space that I think could be a guy that really is weaponized. And obviously we don't really know who Tanner Engstrand is as the play caller there in New York, but he does come from Detroit. Of course, they did a lot of very creative stuff with their right tackle, Penei Sewell. So I think this is a great fit from just that angle alone. And also Field, like, I look at the Jets depth chart right now. They sign Justin Fields, who, you know, it's probably not a coincidence that he ripped up Aaron Glenn as a rusher multiple times, like man coverage heavy defense. Like, yeah, I think I can envision a run heavy offense put together by a defensive minded head coach with Justin Fields. They signed Andrew Beck as a fullback. There's a lot of signals here that they want to run the piss out of the ball this year, and I think this pick obviously would be a huge part of that.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's just call it what it is with Justin. He's a tantalizing player still, but as a passer, we know that the way that Justin Fields is going to operate with success is when he can drop back in a deep pocket and just bombs away down the field, as opposed to playing the precision, timing, rhythm passing offense, right, that maybe you see from the McVay tree. So being able to run the football can help set some of that deep play action stuff up. And Membu, very gifted pass protector, that when the Jets do want to drop back with Justin Fields, he should be able to hold up his end of the bargain.
Yeah, and let's be real, for our fantasy listeners out there and viewers on YouTube, this is a signal here. Hey, you know, Breece Hall, a lot of touches coming his way. Garrett Wilson, a lot of first look passes in this style of offense.
Man, so I
think
hope
people
so.
Can. I hope so as well. Yeah. We'll see. I'm kind of mixed on the Fields Wilson connection, although they did obviously play together. But nevertheless, like, again, a lot of rush attempts here in this offense for sure.
I think that part might be a little bit overstated, right? Just because, like,
yeah,
it sounds like you are sort of on the same board, same place as I am with that one. Is like, Ohio State, it was such a different game, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, bunch of five-star offensive linemen, and, you know, there's three like, you know, future NFL wide receivers on the roster. It's just a different category of football compared to what they are playing or will play now in New York. So definitely can't hurt the chemistry, but I'm not like, if you had to list the quarterbacks that were available this offseason that the Jets could have signed, traded for, or drafted that would most positively impact Garrett Wilson's value, Justin Fields is not near the top of my list.
All right, let's get to your third favorite fit here.
So another one that is just outside. This one actually is inside the top 10. And I did do this one. I did not do this one in my most recent mock draft. But at this point, I should have it tattooed across my forehead. I have called Shamar Stewart from Texas A&M the most fascinating player in the entire NFL draft. He's going to get paid to rush the passer, to get sacks, to make quarterbacks uncomfortable. In his career, three seasons at Texas A&M, Shamar Stewart has 4.5 sacks. 1.5 as a freshman, 1.5 as a sophomore, 1.5 as a junior. That's it. So the people are sitting there saying to themselves, like, how on earth could you take that guy early? Because he's also 6'5", 264 pounds, had a 40-inch vertical leap and ran a 4.5940, and he's one of the most beautiful moving people I've ever seen in my entire life.
Not bad.
I mean, ridiculous. The guy is, you know, there's this old scouting adage that I used to, when I was working in the NFL back in the day, when I first got started with the Patriots, one of the first lessons was we draft traits, we don't draft production. That was right from Bill Belichick. And that's not to say that production doesn't matter. I think people confuse that. The message behind that was, hey, if the guy put up, you know, whatever, 1,500 receiving yards, but he runs a 5.240 at wide receiver, like history tells us that's not going to happen. I'll give you an example of a player who the production's off the charts. I'm not so sure the draft stock's going to be that high. Is Harold Fannin this year from Bowling Green, who had bonkers numbers. But I think people might be surprised if he's sitting there on day three. He's just not a superlative athlete. Anyways, the draft trade's not production thing. The extreme other side of this is Shamar Stewart, who has minimal production but is just an athletic freak. So I'm going ninth overall to the Saints. Now, do I love the fit in the sense that, like, I am just totally convinced it's going to work out? Far from it. That being said, what I have consistently noted about the Shamar Stewart selection is it's going to have to be made by a GM who has some organizational cachet, right? I don't think if you are on the hot seat and you're fighting for your life and you got to win big this year to keep your job and you can decide which GMs fit into that category, or you're a GM who's making his first ever pick, I don't think Shamar Stewart's the place you're going to turn, because this is a football decision, but let's not ignore the human element of it. If Shamar Stewart comes into the NFL as a top 15 pick and then flames out in 2 years, I mean, that's the kind of pick that gets a GM fired, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's the I told you so pick. It's like all right. of us sat here who are not GMs and said, you better be careful, and you still did it. Saints are a different category. Mickey Loomis has been there forever. The Saints were terrible.
Basically
this
runs
season.
The team, Field. He basically runs the team.
and the Pelicans, for that matter. I mean, the guy's got all kinds of organizational control across two leagues. And I thought this would have been the ideal time for the Saints to push reset. They hired the youngest coach in the league now in Kellen Moore. And I know that sometimes their cap situation gets slightly overblown, but it would have been a great time, in my opinion, to say, let's take a step back to take a step forward, because they feel like they're chasing the middle, which is, to me, the worst place to be in sports. They end up making some moves this offseason that were pretty aggressive, right? I mean, 3 years, $51 million for Chase Young. He played better last year. He stayed healthy. But I'm just not so sure that's a player that I would have thought would command that contract coming off of that season, the Justin Reed signing from Kansas City. I mean, a lot of the stuff that they did, but even Brandon Cooks, 2 years, $13 million. Like, what's the goal here? The goal is not to be bad next year in New Orleans, which to me suggests that Mickey Loomis is on firm footing still, which is another way of saying he can afford to take a swing on a guy like Shamar Stewart. And oh, by the way, have the Saints taken swings on guys in recent years that play pass rusher? They sure have. Peyton Turner, 28th or 29th overall to Houston a few years ago. And then a couple of years prior to that, Marcus Davenport, who's now back with the Lions. But we know with Davenport, this was the player that if he put it all together, it could be great. But if he doesn't, he'd be on whatever it is now, or his third or fourth team in like 6 years. So to me, it's kind of the perfect sweet spot where you can take a big swing and draft a player that, for all the cautionary reasons I've laid out, could be a problem. Like, if he hits his apex, like, it might be like, I don't even know what he might be. Like, the truth is that he might not be in like the second or third best player in the draft if he reaches his ceiling.
Yeah, weird player, weird prospect to a weird team. Honestly, the Saints are a weird team. There's no question about that. And I love your point at the beginning about, you know, traits versus production and things like that. I always come back to Jarvis Jones. Remember, you know, he was ultra productive at Georgia in the SEC. And ultimately, he was not a successful NFL player because the athleticism wasn't there. And pass rusher, you bet on athleticism. Shamar Stewart is dripping with athleticism. It might not work out, but I love the point about him going to the Saints here and the cachet that Mickey Loomis has.
I bet the Beach Saints fans that would be pissed off. Truthfully, sure. They probably will be, right? Because if I had to guess, and I can't say that I've pulled every Saints fan, but, you know, just looking at the temperature on social media, it seems like Saints fans actually have the appetite right now to reset.
Yeah,
I think they're prepared to, like, whatever it takes, let's draft a white. Let's go to a premium position with a proven commodity, or even trade back to get more picks. We need a lot of players. Let's just do that. Will Campbell, left tackle or guard from Louisiana, keep in the state of Louisiana, right? This kid's played his high school ball, his college ball, do that. T-Mac, Tenero McMillan, you know, you and I are fans of, like, mm-hmm. That guy at a premium position. Not that Shamar Stewart doesn't play a premium position. It's just that the upside versus downside risk there is so different than the other players who I think could be available at number 9.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think everybody's ready for the Saints. Everybody's ready for the Saints to reset, except the one person who gets to decide if they do or not, and that is Mickey Loomis. So I love this pick by Field here. We are going to take our first break. When we come back, we'll run through some more of Field's favorite fits right after this. All right, Field, we are back. Give me your fourth favorite fit from your most recent mock draft.
Yeah, so this one's an interesting one. It's Jahad Campbell, linebacker from Alabama, going to the Buccaneers. And the reason why I say it's interesting, yeah, he's a star. He's a stud player. To me, the number one linebacker in the draft, Carson Schwessinger from UCLA, the only other one that I think is in the conversation for the first 30 to 35 picks. But Jahad Campbell is an alpha. He's on the field all the time. The added bonus is this kid got some, he has some real pass rushing juice as well. But his pass rushing juice is a combination of like some snaps, like not a ton, but some snaps as an edge rusher at Alabama, and then just great blitzing instincts, timing, and athleticism. I don't think there's a coordinator, well, I guess a coach, but a man who is also calling plays who likes to blitz more than Todd Bowles from Tampa. He'd have the ideal mentor in Levante David, who's back for yet another year, the ageless wonder. But that second linebacker spot's a real problem for Tampa. The interesting part is that we learned just a couple of days ago that Campbell had labrum surgery after the combine. It's very rare for me to compare myself to an NFL player in a meaningful way, but I had labrum surgery on September 11th. So a little over almost six and a half months ago from right now. Can I do math correctly? That sounds close enough. Yes.
Close enough.
Yeah. 6 months ago. And it's a real 4 to 6 month recovery process. And I don't even play professional football. Like I swing golf clubs as like the athletic. That's like the most I do other than like play basketball with my kids in a 1 foot hoop. There are teams that might just like, he might have a touch of a slide, right? Because if you just sort of do the math, if he had surgery in February, even like the high end of when you're returning is the beginning of training camp. And I understand that some kids are more ready for the league than others, but every rookie has a growing period. And if you're not available at the beginning of training camp to go through some of that stuff, it can knock you back a little bit. So I haven't gotten a real pulse from talking to people, evaluators and decision makers over the past few days about it. I haven't gotten a definitive, like, we don't think this matters or we do think this matters, but I've earmarked that as something to watch as we get closer to the draft, how much, if at all, it impacts his draft stock.
Well, a few things here. I will be transparent with the people out there that Field and I saw each other in Indianapolis at the NFL Scouting Combine at Harry and Izzy's. And I just went up to Field, you know, because Field's my guy. And I, you know, brought him in for like a big embrace here. And he's like, whoa, 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 the shoulder. You know, and I was like, oh, I like completely forgot, you know, that you had, you know. So, I mean, listen. I'll just be transparent here that, you know, I hope people are more careful with Jahad Campbell than I was with Field Yates. Let's just put it that way.
Well, here's the problem is that me getting hit by you, for people that can't tell, and maybe if they're listening and not watching, is that you look kind of like Campbell right now. You are fantasy football's most jacked human being. I don't even know who the close second is, but it's definitely not me. So, you know, if like my guy Mike Clay from ESPN came up to me and gave me a shoulder tap, I'm not sure I'd even feel it. But a Matt Harmon shoulder tap hits quite literally a little bit different.
Well, number one, appreciate it. Number two, I'm starting to cut to get down to the draft show, you know, lean out for our draft show at Yahoo Sports. God. So it's
I don't
it's,
cut it's or bulk. I just, you know.
Just exist. Just, well, yeah, hey, let me exist. Let me tell you about the Jahad Campbell thing. Love the prospect. I love this fit, but the shoulder thing is messing with me a little bit here because the reason I love the Jahad Campbell pick, number one, he's my favorite prospect in the draft that's not a wide receiver. I know most people care about my wide receiver thoughts, but I think he is a fantastic prospect. He's the perfect modern day linebacker. I come back to what Daniel Jeremiah was saying on this show actually last year about these tall linebackers clogging up passing lanes. I think he can do that in addition to the rush stuff. Like truly, I think if you dropped a healthy version of Jahad Campbell, like at his peak of his powers into the Bucs defense, that's a transformational pick for a defense that badly needs it. The problem, Field, is I think this is a defense that needs to get better right now. And rookie linebackers, like those guys can have their heads swimming with all the responsibilities at times. So that's giving me some hesitation here too. But if he's healthy, I do love the fit.
Yeah. And so again, full, I mean, people who are listening to this have a timestamp on it, but you know, if it's April 1st and we find out that Campbell's not going to be ready until whatever, middle of training camp, then maybe we have a more thoughtful conversation about how much it impacts his draft status. I still think the guys are round one lock, and honestly, it might just totally clear, and he could be a top 15 pick. Neither would surprise me.
Yeah, same. And if he does fall to a patient team that can kind of wait a little bit on him, if he's going to miss some time, they're going to get a big value on that.
Totally.
All right, give me your fifth favorite fit here.
All right, this is a player that I've been sort of, I think, close to the front of the hype train on for quite some time in the pre-draft process, and that's Max Hairston, who became a whole lot more popular after he was the fastest player the entire combine, ran a 4.28 40.
Your hipster band went mainstream in Indianapolis.
That's right, baby. And he goes 23rd overall to the Green Bay Packers. Packers, who, again, as of this recording, still have Jair Alexander on the roster. That feels like more of a when, not if, as far as the divorce is concerned. And on top of that, I think you have enough sort of sensibility about this to already know this back and forth. But, you know, the Packers last year hired Jeff Hafley from Boston College, and they were much heavier in terms of their zone percentage of snaps, or the percentage of snaps in zone, than I anticipated them to be. And I was thinking about it as the season was going on and on and on. I don't think there was much of a mystery behind it. They didn't have the horses last year, right? Alexander basically misses the entirety of the season with this very obscure injury situation that kept on lingering and lingering and lingering. They just didn't have the guys in the back end that you can trust to play man coverage. I think Jeff Hafley wants to blitz and wants to play man coverage. I am married to a lovely Boston College graduate, so I've married into the Boston College football family. And I watch an inordinate amount of Boston College football. Did so when Jeff Hafley was there, and they were unafraid to dial it up. Yeah. They just couldn't dial it as much last year for Green Bay, in part because the cornerback play and obviously the pass rusher play as well. But Hairston, man, he is just this guy finds the football. He is a turnover or a pass breakup waiting to happen. Two seasons ago, he led the SEC in interceptions. He had two pick sixes against Vanderbilt in the same game. I mean, it was just an awesome, awesome moment for him. He's really fast, which I mentioned. And, you know, that allows you to get in and out of trouble, right? Like, you can trust your speed too much, and you can let a guy run by you on a double move. And then you can get right back in phase with that player because you're faster than basically everybody not named Xavier Worthy and maybe Tyreek Hill in the NFL. So I'm a big Max Hairston guy. I think he deserves to be a round one lock, and the Packers could really use some cornerback help.
Oh, yeah. Just think about it in that division. You know, you've got three passing games. If Ben Johnson is who we think he is and he's able to further activate DJ Moore and Roma Dunze and those guys in Chicago, you've got some pretty good receiver rooms there in the NFC North and guys who can challenge you on multiple fronts. And, you know, and the Packers know this on their end of it from the receiver position. Shoot, if you're able to lock down guys in man coverage and force quarterbacks into, you know, young guys in two spots as well, Minnesota with JJ McCarthy most likely and Caleb Williams in Chicago, like that man coverage, if you don't have if you can't scheme around it, like there's that can really put you in a bind. And it's a great point about the Packers defense. I can't remember which player I was charting recently for free agency, but they're going against the Packers, and I just hadn't thought about the Packers defense in a minute. It was a reminder of like, man, this is not what I expected out of this unit when they hired Hafley. I thought a lot more cover one, you know just heavy like man on the back end, and we just it wasn't fully the Joe Barry passiveness that it was in the years prior on defense, but it was a little bit like kind of meeting in the middle. And I think you're right that probably Hafley wants to tip the scales a little bit more aggressively.
I think so. And my guy, Mike Clay, second Mike Clay reference on the show, had the Packers 70.8% zone last year, 70.8, which was right at the top of the NFL leaderboard. So I think they got away from what Jeff Hafley wants to do, but I think that was sort of, it was not by design. That was by necessity.
Yeah, I like this pick a lot. Again, another one. I don't know as much about Hairston as you do, obviously, but I mean, man, this is a fascinating fit. Just considering man coverage guy, kind of checking more boxes for their defense. And look, like the Green Bay Packers, they're going to take their premium positions. This is another shot at it here.
Yep, totally. That's definitely, and you know, Packers fans know that they're unafraid of pass rushers with traits. So Shamar Stewart at 23 would also be one that I would not be stunned by if he makes it there.
All right, we are going to take our last break. We come back, the player that Field is going to stand on the table for in this year's draft right after this. All right, Field, let's land the plane here. It's time for Stand on the Table.
Captain, my captain.
Sit down, Mr. Anderson.
We have Bills Mafia here.
Let's go!
This is where we bring in, again, any of these great guests that we have on during draft season. We get them to stand on the table for a prospect that they absolutely love. They're willing to go to bat for. You know this, Field. You know, you worked in the league. Like, guys, stand on the table. I don't know. You may want to literally stand on the table over there. I don't know what setup you got going on, but maybe just, you know, I don't know. That looks a little precarious back there.
This rinky-dink table that I have over here, it's like an auxiliary desk when I have to do some other stuff, would probably hold, not even hold my youngest child who weighs like 25 pounds. So I'm not going to put my 173-pound frame to the test on that one.
Okay, well, there we go. Let's just metaphorically stand on the table here. Who's the prospect you want to stand on the table for in this year's draft?
Yeah, you know, Ohio State this past year was littered with offensive talent. I mean, defensive talent too, but they were littered with all kinds of talent. And Mel Kiper Jr. said this once, and it's a statement that I have been borrowing since. He said the MVP of that team was Donovan Jackson, who this past year moved from guard to left tackle when Josh Simmons tore his patella tendon back in October. And it's not that Ohio State was totally bereft of talent, but the fact that they moved a guy, Donovan Jackson, who had been entrenched as their guard for several seasons and was All-American level good, to left tackle tells you just how desperate that spot was. That even Ohio State didn't have an option that could get them above the cut line. And as we know, for as great and as dominant as they were in the playoffs, like Ohio State, they dance on a thin margin throughout the past regular season. Donovan Jackson moves from guard to left tackle, which I think just on principle is a selfless thing to do. Like the fact that a guy, I get it, these guys have a lot of pride, but he could also have gone to Ohio State staff and said, I'm cool. Like, I got to look out for my draft stock, and I have a chance to be a first-round pick as a guard. If I go to left tackle and look like a fish out of water out there, people could be questioning any number of things. My athleticism, my instincts, my pass protection. He went out there, started off a little bit rocky. By the end of the season, it was damn good. I still think he's a guard at the NFL level just because he's so spectacular there. But Donovan Jackson is – this guy is just a brick crap house. Like, you just don't move Donovan Jackson. He moves you and does so very effectively, plays with great tenacity. You know, there's a I call it temperament, and I think it's an important term in an offensive line evaluation, is that you want the right level. You don't want guys who run so hot that they do dumb crap, right? And they find themselves playing past the whistle and getting 15-yard penalties. But you also don't want guys who are passive. You want guys who have the controlled aggression to play with force and tenacity, but also do so with in the construct of the rule so that they're not impacting their team negatively. Donovan Jackson has an incredible run game temperament, really solid in pass protection, obviously has positional versatility. Maybe this is a hot take. Maybe it's not. I've said this previously. If you told me he goes somewhere in the top 20 picks, I wouldn't be totally stunned. This is not the point of today's show, but I'll make it because I think it's an important one. The theme of this year's draft, and I'll put this on Twitter at some point, to me, is variance and opinions at the top of the board. Mm-hmm. I just don't think this is a year where there's like 35 guys who could go in round one and you'll just miss a few. Like, I think there's like 45 guys who I can see going in round one, and I might go 20 for 32 of my final mock draft in terms of players that I have in round one versus those who go in round one, which is a different way of saying that, like, Donovan Jackson, if he went 18th, wouldn't surprise me. If he goes 28th, also wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I mean, just to make the point about this show and Mock Draft Monday, like, we've had three now. It's been Hayden Winks, Trevor Sickleman, yourself. We have plenty more coming. And I don't think there's had a lot of like repeat guys in here in terms of like fits that people like. So I think it is going to be that type of draft. So like, if you have conviction about a player, to bring it back to the C word, like let's get this guy. And I love your analysis on Donovan Jackson. I've just been watching a lot of Ohio State. I just finished up charting Emeka Egbuka, and you know, it's hard not to like steal the eyes away to like the offensive line and the run game and everything. And he sustains blocks. Like, that's what I really like about Jackson overall. So do you like, Real quick, do you have any like kind of a scheme that you might like to see him in, a particular team or anything like that?
Yeah, so I would say with the scheme front, like I kind of break it down into just two big categories right now for offensive linemen. Is, you know, there's obviously a lot of power schemes, guys who want to just ground and pound you. And then they're also like Baltimore Ravens want to just kick the crap out of you up front. And then you have a lot of teams that want to run that, you know, that outside zone scheme, right? A lot of, you know, the LA Rams, the sure. pretty much anybody in the Shanahan McVay tree, right? I have found that there are guys who pretty clearly are one or the other, and then there are guys that are both. And that's part of the appeal of Donovan Jackson. I think you put him anywhere, honestly, truthfully. Like, there are other guys that are going the first round. Like, Gray Zabel, I think, is an absolute stud. He's a zone scheme fit, North Dakota State. Tyler Booker, who I think is, you know, a borderline round one pick, has to be in a power
gap
scheme.
Guy,
like, if you're putting him, you know, you want to put that guy in an outside zone scheme, like, you're doing yourself a disservice, doing him a disservice, truthfully. So that's part of the appeal for me is with Donovan Jackson is I just think this guy is, you know, a 32 team fit, which is not necessarily a slam dunk for the majority of offensive linemen.
I mean, you said in passing, I actually like the idea of him as a Raven. You know, they run a lot of different concepts because they have two very different styles of rushers, and obviously Lamar Jackson and then Derrick Henry. So I think he would be a real asset there replacing Patrick McCary. So we'll see. I love the Donovan Jackson call out. That's a great one from you, Field. A very good way to end the show for you standing, metaphorically standing on the table.
Let's do it.
That is going to do it for today's show. I appreciate the hell out of you, Field, for jumping on here. Tell the people what you got working on leading up to the NFL draft.
Yeah, I would say the best place to find it is, you know, I'm still doing First Draft twice a week with Granny and Mel, and then Top 50 is going to drop soon. I think it's the 20th. Maybe it's today. I can't remember. Honestly,
dude, who knows what day it is, man? It's crazy.
Top 50, I'm working on, I'm at like, you know, 279 out of my 380 guys I want to rank. So I have like a little, I remember being just over 100 away from finishing my, like just sort of actually placing them where I want to place them in the matrix there for the big board. So we're rocking and rolling, man. 30 plus days, 31 days from the NFL draft. So we are getting right there, a month away.
It is coming up. And if you're not listening to First Draft with Mel and Field, I mean, you're missing out on essential draft prep here. Shout out to Field again for joining the show. Thanks to you all for listening. That is going to do it for today's show. Tomorrow, we continue. We roll out the first edition of our other annual draft series here on the pod. Teams that will shape the draft this year. We're going to kick things off with, of course, looking at the quarterback needy teams. Until then, we are out.